Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. Today we're going to talk about a subject that is too much. There's too much to it. There's too much depth. So hopefully we can get through it in some kind of reasonable coverage. And hopefully the things that we say about it are accurate.
Hopefully you believe
complete.
Them.
Complete.
You believe those things.
Yeah. And because what we're going to be talking about today is truth.
Truth. Like at one point I looked over at Dave doing his notes and he was just flustered. He's just like, I can't do it. There's just too much. It's too much. I'm like, yeah, we're talking about the oldest function or topic for philosophical debate of all time.
Well, if you start reading about truth, it just seems like an endless pit. There's, you know, the philosophical side of it, and then there's the practical side of it, and even the way that those two things, you know, interplay, and then you break it down into linguistics, and there's too much.
It's fun. Well, give you love definitions to start. Did you find one you like?
Yeah, I found two that I like.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Give them. Double whammy.
And I think there's an importance between the two that we probably will talk about later. So the first one, and both of these are from the Oxford Dictionary. The first one is that which is true or in accordance with fact or reality. I don't like when it uses the word in its definition, but if you take out that, it would be that which is in accordance with fact or reality. Okay. And so I like that. And then the second one, which is I think what you just talked about in the intro, hopefully you believe it. A fact or belief that is accepted is true.
Yeah. So. Yeah, those are good. It's basically something that's occurred that's accurate. A fact that has happened that's indisputable, something that someone believes to be true is kind of how I think about truth. Because obviously when you start thinking about it, it is very, very deep. But our society is really good at perverting things. And so I think that's what we've done with truth and made it something to sell rather than something to engage with. Because for me, truth is a process. It's not a one-time event. And I think that's an important point. Truth is, period. But to get to that is, it is a process. It is digging. It is mining. It is messy. It is complicated. It's layered. It's raw. It's a maze. And that shit's hard to sell. That shit's hard to wrap in a beautiful little package story. And that's what we've come to require and desire in society is if we can't – most folks, if they can't put a topic into a brief nutshell with someone, they're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's funny. There was a great – article that I found, and it was on the APA site, and it just broke it down so well that I think it's probably something that maybe we could put in show notes or something. But it talked about exactly what you said about simplicity. When people are judging if something is true, simplicity is one of the first things that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So they talked about, you know, your gut reaction, right? So like the tie of emotion and feeling in with your acceptance or your judgment of whether something is true. And they basically said if it takes analytics, right, if it takes relation to prior knowledge and or searching for new knowledge.
System two thinking, right?
It's you're much less likely to judge it as true.
Because that's hard work.
Yeah, it just doesn't – it don't feel good.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's some element of truth. Something is more likely to be judged as true. Or if you take the second definition, a fact or belief that is accepted as true, it's more likely to be true in that instance if it's simple, if it's easily digestible.
But truth is just so interesting because we all carry computers around with us and screens, and you have people on these screens. And so most folks, especially boomers, no fault of their own, they see something on a screen and they'll take it as truth. Oh, the guy said it on this thing. It's the news, like right here, and young people too, and just the whole fake news and false. So the relationship between what news is and truth to me is so funny because it's been so perverted, and Trump clearly played into that and made that a way to drum up support for himself. But the idea that people in general, even pre-Trump, conflate news with truth was always just really funny to me.
I mean, everything that you hear or read has all this nuance behind it, and we're constantly judging that nuance based on this. There was this table that was talking about judging truth, and so I thought that this would be something that would be very good to talk about. So exactly what you said, when a boomers are looking at a screen and it comes out, they judge it as true. Well, I would even give some nuance to it, right? Like let's say your stereotypical conservative of the baby boomer generation, right? So they care about things like, do others believe it? Is it compatible with my prior beliefs? What is the source? Is it credible, right? And so all that weighs into it. So depending on what narratives they bought in before that, on what truths that they've judged before that, they will or will not believe it more. So if it comes out of Fox News, that conservative will probably have a greater chance of thinking it's true versus if it comes out of, I don't know, MSNBC or whatever the most like liberal left-wing
I'd say
is.
That's all the same for the people on the left, though, too.
It is.
Yeah,
it
it's
is.
The exact same. Okay,
it's exactly
cool.
The same. Gotcha. I'm saying that.
Perfect.
This table, though, talks about the five things that I thought was interesting. Social consensus. Do others believe it? Compatibility. Is it compatible with what I believe? Coherence. Does it tell a good story?
Yeah, does it ring true?
Credibility. Does it come from a credible source? And support. Is there supporting evidence? And so it goes through this about how people judge truth, and there's two phases of judging truth, intuitive and analytical. And then it just gives examples of intuitive judgment of truth and like these like snap things that we do versus analytical judgment of truth when we are seeking out more information to back up our judgments about it. But basically these five categories are what it broke it down into. I thought it was interesting.
No, I like it. Yeah. That one of the things you mentioned hit on something I wanted to discuss as well, which is truth and judgment. We can sit around and smoke dope and just think about truth all day, and philosophers have done so for thousands of years. Maybe not the smoking dope part, but
no, they'd smoke dope.
Yeah, true. But my point is like, well, what's the point if we don't do anything with the truths we believe? So for me, it's all about truth and judgment. Judgment is about decision making. Decision making is about actions, choices. People get so caught up in their beliefs. This is my belief. Okay, I'm just going to pick a random one. You say you're religious and you believe in God or Jesus, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Well, how often do you go to church? Like, what do you do in your community to spread the beliefs? Well, I don't do any of that. I just believe that this is okay. So what's the point of your truth or your belief? To me, if there's no action being taken, no judgment that's being shared, no impact being created, you're fucking lazy.
Well,
I don't like it.
Yeah, here's the thing. A lot of people stop though at the preaching level of truth, right? Right, because that's emotionally rewarding. So they are trying to gain the consensus. Do others believe it? And so it reinforces their beliefs, which makes them feel good. It's this cycle of feeling good. So like, let's say there's something that I have inherently judged. I have instinctively judged as true, right? But intuitively judged as true. But then my gut is like, yeah, I think that's probably true. But now I'm moving on into the more analytical piece of it, right? What's one of my ways? I can go look for evidence. I can go research the source and find that it's credible. But what's the way that would really feel good? It'd be getting consensus from people I respect and love around me, right? If they believe it too, then I am way more likely to hold on and solidify that belief. So I'll talk to them about it, and I might even be persuasive when I'm trying to talk to them about it to get them to believe it too. And I think there's a huge element of that in what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that people have conflated talking in that manner with action. That to me is the scenario of the stray dog running on the highway and people being like, oh, look at that dog, pulling other cars over. Look at this dog. Look at all this poor dog. Do you feel sorry for the dog? I feel sorry for the dog. Versus fucking stopping and getting the dog in your car and getting him off.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the difference.
No, that makes total sense.
Is the action.
Yeah, that makes total sense. But they would argue, yeah, but we can't get the dog off the highway until everyone knows there's a dog off the highway.
And that's my point, where belief in itself or having a truth but not doing something with the truth, that's not human. That's immature.
Yeah. No, I'm not arguing against you. I'm just saying
no, I know
that's
not.
How these people justify what they do. They don't change their life to become the martyr for whatever cause it is that they want to be. They go to the level of preacher, and then they're like, well, I'm doing God's work. I'm doing preacher. I'm spreading the word. That's good enough.
Let's get away from religion because that's easy. Work.
Well, I don't even mean religious.
No, I brought it up. Way. I'm saying just because I don't – because truth is tough. It's tough. It's sticky. So let's do something that involves us. Family is the most important thing, but yet having to work so much and be detached. So what's our real truth?
Oh, man, there's contradiction.
Right.
Contradiction all
that's,
over the
that's
place.
That's my point. It's like, again, it goes back to, well, I believe in this. Okay, you're telling me what you believe, but you're spending all of your time and attention doing other things.
Yeah. It goes back to, and I think we did the episode on it, values. And multiple things can be true and overlapping, in my opinion. And you have to make a judgment call over which you prioritize.
So what's the most true?
Yeah. And you know what's nuts about the one that you just talked about? That makes me think about how much my experience weighs in on what I consider true and what I will rank in my values. And so since 2020 and this whole COVID thing with everybody working from home and spending time with kids – I having the kids home so much, right, has become the norm. And so now when they're gone, I notice it a lot more. Where it used to just be, no, it's normal. You give your kids to somebody else for 12 hours or however long it is a day. Not 12 hours, but, you know, 8 hours a day. And they're gone. And you're at work, right? And then you get to spend the night, the evening with them and have dinner and get them into bed or whatever you choose to do. Like, that's normal. Where now it's like, well, wait a minute, is that normal? Like, our family has been together and all day, every day, and I kind of like it. I kind of like seeing them around. You know, now that I'm going back into an office and dropping the kids off at a school and a daycare, like, I'm missing them in the middle of the day. Like, wait a minute, I would have never felt that way. If I had just had a 30-year career in the old way without any change in society, would I have ever made that realization? So no, they would have just grown up.
So our truth emerges from our experience is what I take away from your story.
A huge part of it. A bigger part than I thought. Yeah.
Is there truth that humans can attach ourselves to that's outside of our experience?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about that. We have friends and family who are voracious readers and media consumers of, we'll say, unproven theories about society and life.
Just like everybody has. And some, yeah.
And they like to proselytize about it, and I get to hear plenty of it, right? And so I basically have come to the point where I was like, what is my stance on that in general? And my stance on that and truth in general, I think I've just boiled it down to try and be simple, because simple is easy to explain. Look, if I've experienced it myself, then I know, to me, it is true, right? Now, we can get into, and maybe we will later, dementia and hallucinations and all that stuff. And I think we should. But,
yeah, interesting.
But let me just say, for me, if I've experienced it myself, that's the closest thing that I can know is true. Now, second, if a third person that I trust, that I love, that, you know, so my family, you, if they have experienced it themselves and they tell me a story and I wasn't there, right? So if I observed it, then I'm counting that as me being, it happening to me.
your direct experience versus indirect experience of someone you find credible and trust.
And then I'm saying there's even a third level, which is someone I don't know or trust, but they've got whatever credibility they've built up with society, and they're telling the story, right? So it's like, if it happened to me, that's my closest truth. If or if I observed it happen to someone, that's my closest truth. And then so, so on.
Layers,
from there.
Yeah.
And so I think I just – that's it. I just lump it into those. And so every time, you know, that these conspiracy theories come and, oh, but it's – look, how could you not believe this? You know, it passes all the tests. The person's credible, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, look, bottom line is most of the things that I hear are in that third category. And so I, on those, my ultimate judgment is just like I am about some of the biggest things in life. I'm basically agnostic.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good point. But I think that's where we're screwed up because of the little tools we have in our hands because the whole an offshoot, I find it a problem of media, which we shouldn't even have a term social media separate from media. Social media is media today. That is media.
It is, yeah.
It's bigger than all the traditional media companies. They're worth more market capitalization. They're more influential. They influence our elections. So people should stop saying social media. And when they say media, just think social media.
Yeah, you're right. They should just start calling everything else old media or something.
Yeah, old, traditional media, whatever.
Yeah.
My point is that when you're on that and it's so real time and it's you can see anything going on in any nook and cranny of the world, which isn't a bad thing. But a consequence of that is it makes you feel like every issue needs to be your issue. Like everything is, oh man, the sense of I have to have an opinion on this. I must have an opinion on this. There's an article. It came across my newsfeed. I must be able to speak intelligently about this topic. People are – here's a truth. An indisputable truth. People are fucking terrified of saying, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know is so scary to people.
I'll tie all that back to the whole trying to gain consensus. I got to let people know about this. Why? Why do you got to let people know about that? Is it really that important? No, you just want to feel good about the fact that you believe it. And the way that you can get yourself to feel good is by getting everybody else to believe it.
I'm lucky. I've got my tattoo on my wrist. So if somebody's pressing me on something, I can just pull it out and smile and be like, sorry, that's in my zone of concern. I can't concern myself with it because I don't know about it.
Yeah. One of the things that I say, going back to religion, and I'll try to keep this one of the last things I say about religion is, you know, in our part of the world, Christianity is the dominant. It's the default. It's the de facto.
It's not in our part of the world. The entire world's calendar operates according to Christianity timeline.
Sure.
But well, that's a big point.
No. I think, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think if you break down the numbers worldwide, it's like, I don't know, let's say 55% Christianity, 45% Islam, and then the sliver that's left of that not being the
other world religions.
Yeah, or the other world religion. And so my whole point always, whenever anyone's arguing with me about religion and particularly Christianity, is like it's the default here. You know what I mean? Like, so you're not doing anything that's like amazing. I don't know what kind of epiphany you've come to. You just accepted the default. Right. Like, and sure, if you go through your own personal journey to become familiar with it, but I say like the chances of you, if you were born in a part of the world where it was Islam was the default, I'm sorry, but I think you'd be Islamic. And nobody likes to hear that. Yeah. Nobody likes to think
of
that.
Of course not.
You know, but it's to me.
Because they need to speak their truth. I need to speak my truth.
Right.
And I actually agree with what that phrase means. I just hate hearing that phrase. Don't say that. Just say what you need to say. I need to speak my truth. Don't tell me that. Just tell me what you're thinking. It's so weird to me that phrase has become so used and ingrained. It's really getting about at an ontological perspective, is truth real, right? Is it objective? Is it relative? Is it subjective, right? And we can go really deep philosophically there, which I don't think we should. But of course there's going to be different truths. Obviously, my truth and how I experience the world is different than my neighbor Nick. It's different than Adam and Jenny. There are certain things that we will all experience the same way, and there are things that we'll talk about, and my truth and facts for that experience are completely different from theirs.
That's really interesting.
A parade. We all go watch a parade. we have had a different experience and will take away different sets of facts about that parade, different emotions, because we've noticed different things. They've connected to different experiences from our past life that reinforce certain other belief structures we have. So truth, again, it's a maze. It's a ladder. It's, you said there's competing truths on top of each other. And that's what makes it fun. And that's what makes it like poetry. And people fucking hate poetry.
That was good.
Yeah, I stole it. It's from the movie The Big Short.
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
But it's a great.
It is. It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. So one of the things that I think – so we're first of all, we're burning through all my good stuff in my notes.
Not burning,
man.
We're using it.
Man.
We're using it.
We're just flying through it. So I think we're to the last big thing that I wanted to talk about, which is exactly what you just said, like reality, right? Shared reality, our own experiences, like, you know, so to us, here's a good one, right? The gold standard of what, when I was going back and like, to me, it's the most true if I experience it. I would even think that there's, so let's say that's the gold standard of truth to me. Now I just thought of one that's even better, the platinum standard, is if we together experience it and we, did you just see that? Yeah. Did you see whatever that I can't even believe my eyes that I saw? Yeah. How did you see it? You tell me the exact same thing that I did? Wow. That's platinum truth. We both experienced something. And then we would judge that was real. But that was in reality.
Yes.
That was not my mind playing tricks on me.
And now what happens with society is we haven't even mentioned the P word yet. Power. Power in truth. When you have someone in power, like a Trump, he's the master gaslighter. You didn't just see that. That didn't just happen.
That is
so people good. With power, and it doesn't have to just be Trump. He was just a master manipulator, right? And he knew how to play the media into a frenzy and keep himself in the cycles. He's the best at that in modern politics. Gaslighting is convincing someone that their reality and experience is untrue. Oftentimes people do it pokingly and playfully with friends, but when you have a person in a position of power doing it to achieve an agenda, get elected or whatever, that can become an issue. But your platinum rule, now we take our experience, we write a blog article about it, we put it on the screen. Then people see it on the screen, they're like, well, dude, I'm reading the article. This happened. This had to have happened. So the idea of mediated communication, of putting our shared experiences now through in virtually and digitally, it gives it its own power, because authority doesn't reside in people. It resides in power, and power is a feeling between people. So if you can manipulate the truth by using your power, that's what all our top-level federal politicians do, in my opinion. They just use their positions of power to manipulate the truth as they see fit.
Yeah. There's no doubt to that. You can convince people that they experienced things that they didn't, and vice versa, that they didn't experience things that they did.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
But I loved your platinum. To me, it all goes back to that platinum rule that you talked about.
Yeah. When we're talking about reality, I think that's what it ultimately comes down to. Like, we've all decided that we have a shared reality because we explain experiences as a group. Like, we all saw these things together. And so that's our check. Like, did that actually happen in reality? Did you see that? Yeah, I saw it too. Okay.
That's why substances and drugs and things like that can be interesting and useful or fun or terrifying tools to alter our perception of reality.
Right.
And then when you have somebody like me who, when I was a active alcoholic, not a recovering one, my reality was just so skewed. It was so skewed. And then you layer on people on other drugs that can be a bit more hardcore, although alcohol is very hardcore if you're abusing it. You're just living in this zone or this reality, and no matter how people interact with you to try to give you truths, they're distorted.
Well, no doubt, no doubt. You know what's interesting? I always find interesting, if we're going to talk about this, reality, hearing, and this is something I need to look into more, but I've heard that there are some hallucinogens that people have had shared hallucinations.
DMT.
Yeah, specifically. That's one of the big ones that you hear about this. And that is that's powerful to me, right? Because to me, that means, well, maybe there's an alternate reality. You know what I mean? Like, our brains are built to filter what we experience into, you know, with our five senses into this reality. But if we did something to mess with the brain and the senses, are there other realities that we're just not experiencing? And that to me lends some credence to that theory. Like, if people had a shared experience, right? There it is. It's way more powerful now, you know. And I guess now I'm talking about breaking down levels of this, because I didn't have that shared experience. But if someone and it was just coming from a third party, but if I hear a bunch of people, right, saying that we had a shared experience, to me it's like, oh, that there's more credibility to that than just one of them saying it. If one of those people is a person I love and know and trust, now it's even greater, mm-hmm. right? And so there's all these like sub levels of what I judge as true based on source. I
truth guess. Is so interesting because the humans, we bump into because. It's tough to even talk about truth, especially in today's very political climate, very, I'd call it passive-aggressive society that we live in now, where we'll say anything online, but boy, sure as shit, you get that person in front of you, they're not going to talk about that.
It's so weird. It's so,
but that's how it is. Because it's tough to talk about truth or the facts or those beliefs that you find to be true without also adding layers of interpretation, having starting points and assumptions. So you need to have to actually try to uncover and find and dig to truth. You need to have some kind of moderately agreed to method for truth, method to truth. First principles thinking about motives. What are the rules here? Like, if we're going to debate, just agreeing on a set of facts. We're in such a politicized environment, we can't even agree on facts.
No, you can't even agree on words. That's where the like linguistics of it got in, right? Like, and you hear like fake news, true fact, like mm-hmm. all these terms that don't make any sense. They're stupid.
But again, that's
they're used to manipulate.
But that's just the media. The media is about entertainment, making you a consumer, making you a puppet, hitting your emotional buttons to react. Fear and anger, the two most potent emotions to sell, and it's all about control.
Well, yeah. Well, so they take it a step further, right? So here, I'll say this. When I was talking about folks preaching, and I don't even mean that in a religious term, right? You got people who believe in Bigfoot, and it's their mission to convince everyone that Bigfoot exists.
Bitcoin, move to Webster Groves, like just getting religious about a topic.
That's what I mean when I say preaching. So you got these people who take it to that level of preaching, right? And their motivation is to feel good by getting consensus from others. That's purely their motivation. Then you've got what you're talking about, which is people who may not even believe this thing themselves, but they are trying to convince a group that it is true because they see that they can benefit from it, that they can get some control or power from it. That's a totally different thing. And it also happens.
But,
you know what I mean?
Well, that goes back to the power thing. People who have power. I define power as the feeling. It's just pure like that self-confidence. Control is the mechanisms, yep. right? So when you have control or authority to make decisions that affect people, you are powerful. But that power only resides between people. It's a feeling. But it can become really problematic, because then if you have true power and authority, like a president or leading a company, if something's occurring that doesn't fit with your truth, what are you going to then do? You're going to pull all the levers at your disposal. Now you're going to start to dig into the process of the truth creation. Well, the courts, they're corrupt. Courts are corrupt.
It's so funny. Or, well, you said if something happens that doesn't fit into your truth, that can happen to an individual. And then that individual just decides whether they accept it or they don't. And a lot of times people, if it would shake their core belief about life, their core philosophy, their core religion, they'll reject it because it's just too much of a change. And it makes them feel bad, right? We come back to emotions again, right? So they'll reject it. Even if they experience it themselves, they'll reject it. Then you've got what you just said, which is if this person is in a position of power and that challenge to their truth would impact their power negatively, they will fight it way more vigorously than even what I just talked about before. Because
Because humans don't give away power. That's a law of power.
What was the saying? It's really hard to convince someone.
It's hard to convince a man that something's true when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it.
Yeah, on it not being true or something like that.
Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, which, wow. What does that say about truth?
It says that, to me, it's contextual. It's relative. It's we could get philosophical. Of course, there are large truths. Gravity. Right, we could talk about gravity as a truth, but we don't. We talk about it as a law. So then there's different ways to know. The whole court system, in theory, is designed to get to truth. Right. And I do believe that. Right. There are cases and wonderful people who care about truth and justice. And then there are people who use that as just a tool of business, a way to achieve, again, their goals, their agenda, protect their territory, etc. Both are occurring. It's not one or the other. But if I'm in power, like Trump did, when he lost, what did he do? He questioned the entire election process.
Right.
Right. So it's like, okay, fair enough. He does have that opportunity to – there's checks and balances, which I like about any government, our government. But you got to start with the end. Okay, so what's the end game? For if we're going to pursue this, at what point after the pursuit do we say, okay, we did our due diligence. It wasn't a case. So you got to start there and say, okay, at what point does that not occur? And it's like, no, this was legit. You have to start there and define it and say, we're going to do all the stuff. But when we get to it, if it's illegitimate, damn right, Trump should still be president. If not, move on. But that doesn't occur.
That's true.
Because that's not what they're trying to do.
Right. And it's funny with politics. That is a continuous process, right? The whole claim that the game is rigged. It's akin to the next two baseball teams that are in the World Series, right? The one that loses.
Excellent. I was going to go there.
Says, this whole thing was rigged anyway.
Right. I was going to go to sports and try to find another metaphor to be. It's just what losers say.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, look, there actually is a conspiracy going on in baseball right now about using like sticky resin to pitchers to make the ball rotate.
Yeah, that's an
old
one. That's, again, cyclical.
And apparently, like, they've been measuring the RPM on curveballs, and it's gone way up this year and last year. And pitching coaches are openly advocating for it. Batting averages are down. So there's already this thing going on, right? So now it would be basically using something like that, blowing it out of proportion, and being like, that's the reason we lost. This whole thing is fake anyway. Like, you know, we need to play another World Series. We need a re-World Series where we, you know, do it on fair terms. You know, that's exactly what these politicians are doing.
We've talked macro. Can I bring it micro?
Yeah.
Your wife dyes her hair all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I like
it.
She's independent. What if she chose a color that you fucking hated and thought looked stupid? And she's like, David, what do you think of my hair? How do you – right? So I'm not asking for a real answer. I'm saying let's talk about lived truths, the small truths.
Yeah.
Zach, what do you think of this dress on me? And I think it's terrible. I don't like – and she's asking me directly.
Yeah.
Right? So then we can talk about, okay, what's the difference of lying or stating false beliefs versus omission of information, right? And so then we can get really tricky. Because in a court of law, omission of information is not lying.
Right.
That's legal.
Right, right.
So that – we live these non-truths, these small truths, these things we omit. Or, like another friend we have, when he gets asked a question, he wants to answer it linearly and factually and literally. I hate it. It looks bad. You look fat. Not good. Deal with it. That's the truth. If you don't want the truth, don't ask the question. Your face, I can tell you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean,
what,
like,
would you say?
It all depends on your relationship with the person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Truth is contextual. So that truth coming to light, what does it do? Does it cause a problem? If it causes a problem, you're going to try to avoid it.
Or
you'll try to omit it.
Nuance the words.
Right.
Because again, you can say things, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
That's two different sayings.
Yeah. No, exactly. Well, and here's the thing is like, what truth is coming to light?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, are you repelled by, so let's say in that situation, I'm literally repelled by her hair. Like, oh my God, I can't take it. Right. And I don't want to look at you when your hair is that color. Right. So would it be true for me to be like, I would pick a different color if it were me? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
trying to soften the blow.
Yes.
Like, But maybe that's only 85% of the truth, right? And there's the 15% of the truth that I'm not letting out.
To me, it gets to your layered truths. The larger truth is I love my wife, and I don't want to say something to her in a way that causes a hurt. You know? However, I respect my wife, and she's asking me a direct question and deserves to know at least most of what I think.
Yep. And I feel confident in our relationship that it's stronger than the fact that I'm going to tell her that her hair color she chose.
But I think those are the truths that are more important, really, than these dumb big truths for our federal politics. They're just going to always do their games. That's how it's going to go. Yeah. But the family truths, the community truths, the job truths, those are the ones we face every day.
Yes.
And having a method to truth. When you have a method to truth, you have to know there's going to be consequences to whatever your method is. So whether it's lying, that's your method to truth, that truth isn't important, okay, there's going to be consequences. Whether it's omitting, whether it's being totally literal and factual, you have to accept the consequences that come with your choices when you're grappling and dancing with truth.
Oh, absolutely. All of that is 100% true.
It's not easy.
No. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what. Growing up, let's talk about one truth that I think demonstrates that exactly. In an interesting way for me. Growing up, I had to come to peace with the truth that there's no magic. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so why is that a big consequence? Because it changes your entire experience about life, right? Taking away the mystical takes away possibility and takes away wonder and takes away all this stuff, right? Now, as an adult, I've become so familiar with that truth that I've even learned some like sub-truths, right? So even though magic isn't real, doesn't mean it. When I say magic isn't real, I mean that a trick that a magician plays.
You mean like literal
isn't
magic.
Isn't happening. I mean literal magic, right?
Because we were into magic.
Right. Like, I don't believe that sorcery can happen. I don't believe you can put a spell on someone. I don't believe that, you know, magic. Actually, what you would see in a movie and it would be magic, or what you would see a magician do on stage knowing that what you're seeing is not what actually is happening, right? That's what I'm talking about. It takes away wonder. It takes away all this stuff. And I didn't want that. I want wonder. I want, you know,
some uncertainty.
Exactly. It's like I want uncharted territory. Mm-hmm. I want to know there's more to explore and more to learn and more possibility. That's exciting to me, and cutting that off. But as I've become an adult, and this is where that layered truth comes in, I've come to learn that a trick that a magician plays perfectly can be indistinguishable from magic. And then that way, to me, it is magic. It's just changed the way I think about magic, right? And we were talking about technology.
I was just going to say, my read on you is that's why one of the reasons why you like technology so much is it gives you that sense of awe and wonder and possibility. And that's why you're a real technologist, in my opinion. You think technology can like solve so many problems.
Yeah, I don't even think it's not even about the solving of problems to me. It's more about the exploration of possibility.
Nice.
If it opens up a new area of uncharted territory that's possible, both good, bad comes and outcomes. Just like if magic was real, there could be good and bad outcomes from it. It's exciting to me. I don't know why.
That gets to the big why. That's the thing I have written at the bottom of my
notes. Let's talk about the big why.
The big why. That is the core and flaw of humanity, in my opinion. We are so focused on why. Bumping into because, motive, what's the reason, why? All you have to do is go through your day and listen for the word because or why. It's constant. It's every 1 minute we hear it. So we are programmed as a species, you said, to build new tools and stuff. To me, that's just the means. The end is we're trying to get to why. We're trying to find the why. Why? And truth, somehow in the cosmic fabrics, is tied to that. I don't know how, but I believe that real big truths, not the contextual small ones we've talked about, but the big truths, there is a big why. And everything we do with both religion and science and sex and friendships and business building is all just trying to figure out that big why. And it's just really scattered right now and not organized.
That's interesting. So you know, one of the, if not the biggest one, truth that humans try to pretend isn't true, is we're going to die.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
The coffin questions.
And so although, we walk around pretending it's not true all the time. We do everything that we do pretending it's not true. Everyone to different degrees. You know, Lauren is involved in death positive groups where people are encouraging a change of the truth of death, the perception of death,
the experience,
to be more a positive thing that we plan for, that we accept is coming, and it's not such a negative thing that we try to ignore and whatever. So
you're so morose for everyone.
Right. And so when you're talking about your, like, the why, right? Like, well, that's, there are some huge questions. Why do we die? What is life? Why are we here? Mm-hmm. What is life?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. The big why.
Yeah, the big why. Like, everyone has their own individual why.
Right. Well, and that's why Simon Sinek's whole golden circle was so important. He took the idea of the big why that every human forever is concerned with, and he businessified it and made it be like, hey, start with your why, then go to what and how. It's just like, well, yeah. Of course.
Because
people care about it. That's why he's so popular.
And that was like the John O'Leary thing in Man on Fire. He said, if you have a why, you can do anyhow, right? Something like that.
Sure.
Anyway, but that being said, the reason I went there was because you were talking about technology. Technology is not just building tools and things. It's trying to give us a why. I think ultimately it's trying to give us a why. But if you think about the ways that we're doing it, it's like – we've accepted truths that may or may not be true, and we're building technology based on that truth. So, for example, we were talking about CRISPR and the ability to change genes, right? And what is going to be morally accepted and what's not going to be morally accepted, right? So I don't know why, but humans for some reason have accepted it as a truth that enhancement is not okay.
It's not natural. You can't play God.
Well, but we've already accepted the fact that staving off death is okay.
Well, that's okay. And getting a heart replacement's okay, or getting LASIK's okay.
Right.
But some of these other things aren't.
Well, no. It's like bringing you back to baseline, right? However you were born, if we can maintain that state, that's okay, right? Oh, you were born with cancer. Well, that's bad. We've decided as a truth that is bad.
We'll fix that.
And therefore we can
enhance,
try to eliminate
bad.
That.
Fixing negative things good.
Right.
To me, the playing God thing, if we want to go right to it, when someone is officially dead, if we aren't going to play God, okay, then don't bring them back to life. Let's get rid of CPR. Let's get rid of heart shock therapy.
Penicillin.
All that. Let's get rid of it. Yeah. We're literally bringing people back from the dead there.
Right.
So we accept and compartmentalize these truths. But again, when you said the lines are drawn, that's why me being a weirdo. By who? For what purpose? I'm never going to fit into whatever narrative the news is giving me or whoever.
Acceptable, man. They think about it, and then that's what even constrains your life. The fact that it's socially accepted, it's the fact that we create laws around it. Like, you can't kill yourself. That is a law. It is illegal to kill yourself. Why? Why? What? Because we know that suicide is bad. Do we? Like, no. It's just socially accepted, right? What about if – okay, so if you're perfectly healthy, perfectly normal person and has a negative impact on everyone, okay, I think we all agree that it's bad. What if you're at the end of life and your existence is pure pain and horror, right? Is it okay in that situation? Well, our law says no in just about every state. You know what I mean? So,
well, yeah. Helping other people kill themselves is illegal. Killing yourself isn't illegal. You're dead.
Right.
I'm like, I see what you mean.
You get what I'm saying.
Sorry.
Right. So, but the bottom line is that's all driven by that one, which is why everyone's out there trying to get other people to believe their truths. It drives life. It sets the rules of the game.
To me, there's a big difference between truth, which is typically, I think, difficult, and it takes system two thinking, deliberation, thoughtfulness, grappling with cognitive dissonance and internal feelings that you might not like, maybe having to change or alter certain beliefs, versus what society tells us is truth. Hey, I've got my new YouTube channel. Check it out. I'm going to tell you how to get rich. Like, everyone's got the personal brand, mine included, Dr. Z. Here's how you communicate when you're in trouble. Well, is it? It's worked for me. Like, that's my truth. So to me, again, it's just like these layered truths. I think we're in a society that has to tell the story. We have to share our why. That's what we feel we're doing. And then we just relabel it as truth.
Yeah. And then you're right. And I'll go back to that table, and I love it. It's like, do others believe it? Is it compatible with what I believe? Does it tell a good story? The last one I wanted to talk about, and it ties back to exactly to what we're saying here. History, right? So like, what is accepted as true in history? Truth evolves over time, right? Christopher Columbus was a hero. We got off in grade school because he discovered America. Well,
not anymore.
That was the accepted truth back then. And then I don't know what changed, right? But we could do some research and figure out, well, this, you know, scholar came out and he publicized these writings that were widely known before. They just weren't pushed
or popularized,
you know. And so popular thinking then shifted. And
popular goes back to the social. Popular is just social. What does the larger group think? And then people in power get pushed who are in politics, and they will lose their job if they don't make changes over certain things.
Yep.
You know, and so that's where policies can come from, things like that. But truth is cyclical, for sure.
And that's where the power game comes in. Power and consensus is like, you know, history is written by the victor, right? Like, the good guys have won every war in history.
Yeah,
how is that possible?
But I've got a book right here. It's called Bureaucratic Propaganda. Your industry, GRC, and just how silly and overly formalistic and formulaic it is. But there, you know, there's plenty of truths there. Well, these are the procedures we have to follow. Well, these are the procedures. This is the regulations and compliance. Well, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, because a group decided it was that way. Why? Well, because they're gatekeepers.
It's all about analytics. It's all about what is risk, right? What are our biggest risks? What are going to stop us from achieving
but
our
even
goals?
Even all of that, that has been agreed to and defined and passed down.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. Yeah. It is that way because that's what people choose to do business that way.
I'll even go back to experience on that, right? Because if the goal is to decide what the biggest risk to your objective is and what threatens that, we don't want to think about this in an intuitive gut manner, right? We want to be analytical about it. Well, what do you need for analytics? You need data, right? What is data? Data is just a record of reality that someone said this happened. That's it, right? We measured it. We had this tool that measured it. So it happened in reality. Either someone saw it, someone heard it, a tool measured it. And so that became a part of our data, right? So it was true. So like we've got 10,000 truths that we're putting into this thing to say, is this going to be more probable or less probable in the future based on the truths that happened in the past?
That's the key. Absolute thinking versus probabilistic thinking. Humans think in terms of absolutes naturally.
There you go.
People are not genetically hardwired. All science confirms this and just our daily living. The average person does not think in terms of probabilities. We do not talk in terms of probabilities. Everything is absolutes, and I just did it myself. Everything.
Yep.
Not most things on most days. 87% of the time we talk in absolutes.
Right.
We are wired to do that. Now, not all humans, very analytical people, are naturally wired to think in statistically. And so when you start getting down to that and talking about truth, but again, to me, it all goes back to power. If you're in power and you control means and media and can get your message out and can gaslight, it doesn't matter. I'll just throw cold water on your method. Well, then their method's wrong. Their tools are incorrect that they're using. Then you pay some scientist to publish a paper real quick and point to that paper over and over and over and over.
So I had this in here, and this is so good because it's exactly what you're saying. When knowledge is uncertain, people turn to social consensus to gauge what is likely, probabilistic, right? What is likely to be correct. If many people believe it, there's probably something to it. So for the example, I'm not a scientist, but the more consensus there is among scientists, the more I'm likely to believe that that's true. But here's part two, and I really like this. And this is exactly what you're talking about. This is where the power piece comes into play. Determining the extent of consensus can be difficult. And familiarity offers a plausible shortcut. If many people think so, one should have heard it a few times, making it familiar. This gives small but vocal groups a great advantage. The more often they repeat their message, the more familiar it feels, and the more people infer that many others agree, yeah, even if repetition comes from the same source.
It's called familiarity bias, and that's what the Nazis did. They mastered it. Yeah. Now it's just how media works. You know, get your message out there.
Yeah. So I really like the five things that you say. Whenever you're judging something to be true, right? What you're right is it takes that linguistic thing in, which is words don't accurately describe the way that I'm feeling about
what something is. Well, they can't. They're just symbols. Right? They're symbols.
Right.
Because
if I was going to talk like that all the time, it'd be like, to me, at this moment,
right, you can't.
I think it's more probable than not that whatever. I would have to preface that with everything I say that is a declarative statement. Like nobody's
you don't have time for that.
Exactly. So the linguistics of it limit it. And then we are constantly going through and trying to rejudge the probability of whether we think something is more likely true or more likely untrue based on all those things. Social consensus, compatibility, does it tell a good story, yada, yada. Source, evidence. I like it.
Yeah, I think we just shortcut ourselves and say, does it feel true? Does somebody I like believe it? Yep, then it's for true. And we all repeat and probably shared fake news online without digging in because I don't have time. But this guy shared it. I trust him. Cool.
So does it all tie back to reality? This was my thought. Like the first thing I wrote before I went and looked at anything was, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Because I think that's – well, now we're getting philosophical here. But I also think that there's something about it, reality.
That's truth, just – to me, that right? question I've always just found stupid.
Really?
Yep. I don't even put any thought into it. It's just not an interesting question to me.
So the reason it's interesting to me is because there's a physicist who is doing some groundbreaking work in that our reality is constructed by us. And he claims to have some experiments and results from those experiments that prove it is true that it is. And if we weren't here, this reality wouldn't be here. And that's interesting to me. So to me, if that's the case, then there is no tree falling in the woods if there's nobody there. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, cool. I'm not disagreeing that it's not interesting to others.
Right.
It's just not interesting to me.
No, I get it. I get it.
Cool. Well, you have anything else before we summarize?
Yeah, so I would say truth. How about this? To me, one of the things that's about truth is it's personal to you. Everyone has their own personal truth. And like, sure, other people might share it with you, but ultimately you get to decide what your personal truth is. And it's just more likely than not that if you share it with other people that it'll be accepted or acceptable or whatever. But ultimately, you get
to decide. Not acceptable.
Exactly. Exactly. But ultimately, you get to make that decision. And I think that's powerful, right? Because that's where you have control.
But that goes back to what you were talking about. You're creating your own reality, at least in your head.
Yeah. 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 And maybe even in the way that you experience things. But anyway, all the things that we've said, I think, are super important in this episode.
Nice.
Because we talked about those five ways that you judge if something is true. To me, that's one of the most powerful things out of this episode. The other thing that I think was really powerful in this episode was talking about the platinum truth where it's, you know, shared with people. We both have had the experience going all the way down to like what I think is the least probable to be for me to judge it as true, which is I'm just hearing it from some third party that I don't know their credibility. Like there's a scale there. And so I'm going to do a better job of paying attention next time that I'm relaying something on of where it falls in that scale and how, you know, how strongly I feel about it and what that is about.
But think about the Zuckerbergs of the world have taken these mechanisms of truth and literally built it into their platform. What is it called when we share something? A share. We thumbs up, we thumbs down things to instantly, that's all getting at truth without saying it.
Oh yeah. And it's trying to manufacture
those people
truth,
are
right?
super smart. Well, how they built
you can't
all
say
that
on Facebook. They'll take it down. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, okay, so what are they doing?
Yeah. So again, we could go a million directions with this because it's a big topic. Yeah. What's your method to truth? Dave found one he likes, that framework of five ways to what I'd call grapple with your truths. Truth in judgment, truth in action, truth in media, truth in news, truth in narrative and story. Bumping into your because. To me, it all boils down to truth at the same time unites and divides people and yourself. It unites you to certain topics and people and divides you from others. It can unite you with your wife and at the same time divide you from your wife. And that's why truth is potent and difficult and fun and fleeting and something that we should always keep in mind and not let people around you or people in power act like it's unimportant.
Shared truth is the grease that keeps things moving. If everyone agrees on things, then they can behave, they can seek the same thing together. You know what I mean? It's just like you were talking about with the politics, the election, and the rules of the baseball of the World Series, right? Like, if they didn't agree ahead of time on what the rules were when playing the game would never get played.
Yep.
So shared truth is, to me, it's like it's the grease that keeps things moving, you know?
Yeah. The problem with shared truth is it's not an equal playing field all the time. If I'm playing chess with a person with power and I'm beating them and they're just like, nope, I'm doing this. The queen and the pawn can now do this. Up, I won, game over. And they walk away and then they write up the story about it. That's a problem. And that's how a lot of people in power operate. And mm-hmm. I don't like that. Yeah. But it's always been that way.
Yeah.
But you just have to guard yourself from being gaslighted. Defend, as you said, your personal truths. But no, there's going to be consequences to that because we live in a very sensitive society and people want to unpack every word that gets used and then take you back to the etymological history of where these things come from. So just know that that's there.
Two powerful things that I think I would use for change challenges for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, when I talked about magic and exploration, right, it all came back to possibility. And I think that's something that some insight about myself that I need to explore more. So possibility versus truth. Right? Why do I want there to be more possibility? And why is that so exciting to me? I think it comes back to the core of what we're talking about with Life Lab, experimenting with life, exploring. If there is no unknown territory, if my truths are all set, then what the hell am I doing? There's nothing to do.
That's so what's the change challenge?
I'm going to journal about why I want there to be more possibility, why I want there to be
so for people, magic. They should think about why there should be more. Do you see what I'm saying? Give me what you're going to do. What do we want our audience to do?
I would say both ways. Like, I'm sure that there are people that are just the opposite. You know, you've got skeptics out there that don't want to believe in magic. They don't want to. So is it that they don't want possibility and they want to limit the realm of possibility out there because it makes them feel safe? Or what's going on there? Anyway, which one are you? Do you want there to be more possibility? Do you want there to be magic? Do you want to have unlimited truths? Or do you want to know all the truths and you want to limit the possibilities? You don't want there to be the unknown, the magical.
So have control. Be Jafar from Aladdin.
Exactly. And what does that say about you? Yeah.
Okay.
Journal good about that.
Mine's easy. What are your top five big T truths that you believe cannot be challenged by anyone? And if you don't have five, that's okay. What are your top small T truths, your top five? If you don't have five, that's fine. Things that you believe generally, but maybe the way you say them or describe them, depending on who you're talking to, you'll add some nuance to that. Big T truths, unquestionable no matter what, at all times for every human on earth. Small T truths, that's all I got.
Okay.
So hopefully you've enjoyed this. We got it up right about an hour. And as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.